As usual, the week's castaway is introduced by Roy Plumley.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? On our desert island this week, we're delighted to welcome ashore one of the great figures in the world of jazz. It's the famous jazz trombonist and vocalist known as Big T. It's Jack Teagarden.
Thank you.
Jack, welcome to the island. Is this your first visit to Britain?
Yes. I stopped here at James Plains once when I was with Louis Armstrong about 6 or 7 years ago. But we didn't get off the airport at that time. We couldn't play here.
Yes. Well, you've had a chance to see quite a lot of Britain, I think, in the last couple of weeks, haven't you?
Yes. We've been to 16, I guess, of the major cities.
And from what I've heard and seen for myself, it's been a wonderfully successful tour.
Yes, it has.
There's been, you and Earl Hines and Cozy Cole, Max Kaminsky, Peanuts Hucko and Jack Lesberg, just the six of
you. That's right, six of us. Mm-hmm.
Well, away from the hurly-burly of rushing you from city to city, we're dumping you on the island with just 8 records. How have you gone about choosing them?
Well, Roy, I chose them from different memories that they bring back to me. I imagine if I was on this island, I would have many memories that I cherished over the past 30 years.
Yes.
And each one of these records that I have selected would bring back a very cherished memory.
What's the first memory and the first record to bring it back?
Well, the first record brings me back to a request from Red Nichols for the late Glenn Miller and I to make an arrangement of Basin Street. At that time, Roy, it was just an instrumental by Spencer Williams. So Glenn and I got together and by timing the course, we found out it would take so many courses it would become a little monotonous, we thought. So we thought we'd put some lyrics and a verse to it. So we sat up all night and finally came up with Basin Street in the form you hear today with the lyrics and the verse. So that brings back a memory that I'll never forget. We sat up all night and Glenn's wife made us coffee and we had a wonderful time putting that together.
And this record will hear you singing the chorus as we've heard it so many times.
Yes.
Won't you come along with me to the Mississippi? We'll take the boat to the land of dreams, steam down the river, down to New Orleans. The band there to meet us, old friends to greet us, where all the dark and the light folks meet. This is Basin Street. Basin Street is a street where dark and light always meet. In New Orleans, land of dreams, you'll never know how nice it seems or just how much it really means. Glad to be, yes sirree, where welcome's free. Dear to me, where I can lose my Basin Street blues. the Mississippi. You saw the place where the folks all meet. Heaven on earth, they call it Basin Street.
Well, I've had that record as a cherished one in my collection for a good many years. I never had any idea that it was written by you and Glenn Miller. What's your next memory and your next record?
Well, Roy, I'd pick on one called You Rascal You.
Yeah.
I had a recording date, and at that time, the late Fats Waller and I, we used to meet nearly every night up in Harlem and where he was working. After my job with Pollock in the Park Central Hotel. And we spent many pleasurable moments together. And when I got this recording date, I called on Fats to play piano with me that day, and which he accepted. And when we did You Rascal You, he came in with this jive talk, and it was so funny and humorous that it almost broke me up. I couldn't hardly keep going, and I'd call that one of my most cherished memories.
Let's hear it.
Try to steal.
Oh, no.
Be glad when you're dead, you rascal, you.
Wrong again.
There ain't no use to run, you rascal, you.
Ain't nobody
think
I'm gonna run, sir.
There ain't no use to run, you rascal, you.
Ain't gonna run nowhere.
There ain't no use to run.
Why?
Because I'll pip a pistol at you.
Oh,
be glad when you're dead, you rascal, you.
If you had a good time on that recording session. You're from Texas, aren't you, Dick?
That's right, Roy. I'm from a little town, Vernon, Texas.
Mm-hmm. Did you hear a lot of music when you were a child? Were your folks musical?
My mother was a teacher, and I heard the piano going practically all day long, and it sort of developed an ear for music just by being around it all the time.
She taught you?
She taught me a year or so of piano in the beginning, which helped me out a lot.
Mm-hmm. What made you take up the trombone?
Well, in our little hometown band, municipal band, they didn't have trombones. They gave me a trombone and raised one.
Yes. How old were you when you began to play professionally?
Well, when I was real young, about 7, I used to play in church for my clothes and so forth. But I was about 15, I migrated to San Antonio, Texas, and worked with a four-piece band.
Yeah.
And up until 1926, I played around with the territory bands in Texas and even got as far out as California.
Yeah.
But I was pretty well known in the South.
And when did you go to New York?
I went to New York in about 1926. I didn't go up to play. I was working with a pianist whose wife became ill up in New York. That was her home. And he wanted to get there to be with her real fast, and my hobby used to be racing cars. So I drove him up there in a hurry, and I took my horn along. That's how I happened to go to New York. I got there with $4 in my pocket.
But having got to the big city, you decided to stay there.
Yes, everybody seemed to have heard about this kid from Texas, and he was quite a trombonist. I'm blushing as I say that. But they talked me into staying there, and I fell right into the right crowd.
Well, having got you to New York, let's break off there and have record number 3. What's that going to be?
Oh, Georgia, with my good friend Bix Beiderbecke. And I would choose this record because... Bix Beiderbecke had this recording date, and he called me up and made a date with me for it, and then a little later on during the day, he ran into Tommy Dorsey and made the same date with him. And then a little later on, he ran into two more trombonists and forgotten about us and arranged for them to make it too, making 4 of us. So when we all got down to the date, Bix was ashamed that he'd made the mistake. So he said, well, how are we going to iron this out? And I said, well, Tommy and I'll make one side and have the other two boys make the other side. And it was Georgia. It stands out so wonderful in my memory.
Let's hear it.
Georgia on my mind, Georgia on my mind, Georgia, Georgia, just a song of you comes as sweet and clear as moonlight through the pines. Other arms reach out to me, other eyes smile tenderly. Still in peaceful dreams I see the road leads back to you. My Georgia, my Georgia, no peace I find, just a little song keeps Georgia on my mind. Thank you.
What sort of man was this legendary figure, Bix?
Well, he was a very quiet boy and very talented. He played wonderful piano and wonderful cornet. However, you never could get him to play piano with a band. He always said he didn't play enough piano to play with a band, but we used to argue that point, because he did.
They were wonderful days, those late 20s, I should think, in New York, with all those records you were making with Red Nichols and Vida Beck and Louis Armstrong. Bessie Smith you worked with for a time, didn't you?
Yes, I knew Bessie real well.
Mm-hmm. Did you play with a band at that time, or were you just doing recording sessions?
I was with Benny Pollock. However, it didn't restrict us from recording with anybody we wanted to.
Yes.
And more or less freelancing, so to speak. And there was about 12 or 15 musicians there who made nearly all the discs in those days, and I happened to be one of them.
What was the very first record you ever made, do you remember?
Well, the first one that I can remember and that I did a solo on was She's a Great, Great Girl with Roger Wolf Kahn.
Uh-huh.
And that's the first one that I can remember this far back. And would you like to hear about that record date?
Yes.
Well, I'd just been in New York a short time, and I knew Joe Venuti real well, and Miff Mole, that trombonist. Miff had missed his train coming in for the record date, so the first person they thought of was getting me to substitute for him. And I had just gotten in from being out on one of the all-night jam sessions, and I had to tell you the truth, I was in no shape to make a record date. And because I hadn't planned on one, you know. And anyway, they said, well, you coming down, we'll send a car for you right away. So I went down to make She's a Great, Great Girl. And I was so frightened at this microphone that Venuti had to get behind me and push me up to the microphone. And when it came out, I was afraid to listen to it. But it was quite a sensation. I think everybody heard it before I did. You know, I was afraid to listen to it. But it was one of my prized solos, I guess. She's a great, great girl.
Thank you.
that record was She's a Great, Great Girl. And that's one of the records I'd like to take on the desert island with me. My fond memories.
Well, back in those early days of the 20s, Jack, jazz was a very small circle, wasn't it? Very few people had that kind of music, understood it. Did you ever believe it would grow up to what it is today?
No, Roy, I didn't think it would. I knew that, of course, in the South, it was about our native music. It was just as natural to us, I guess, as our Southern accent is today.
When did you first have your own band?
In 1939, when I finished my contract with Paul Whiteman.
Mm-hmm.
Through being encouraged by a lot of friends of mine, I organized a big band, 16 pieces.
Yes.
And, of course, at that time, I organized at a time when there was a lot of competition. Krupa and all four or five, Glenn Miller and several other boys, they organized the same year. And it made the going kind of rough. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed it very much.
And you had it for a number of years, up to the middle 40s, didn't you? Until
1947.
And since then, you've been with the Louis Armstrong All-Stars?
Yes, we formed that group together.
Mm-hmm. Through all the years, Jack, you've never paid any attention to crazies in jazz, have you? I mean, bebop and progressive music and all the rest of it, you've just let it slide by.
Only to listen to. I've known my capacity, and I've just stuck right to my own way of playing. Because it's the only way I can play.
Well, that's the way we like listening to you play, too. Let's have record number five.
The record number five, I would pick one called Knockin' the Jug. Because it was a meeting of my old friend Louis Armstrong after many years. I met Louis in 1921, and then our paths went different directions up until about 1929. And that was the first record that I ever had the opportunity of working with Louis Armstrong. And I will say that today it's one of my favorite records. And I would take that with me to my island because I think it's not only one of the finest choruses Louis ever played, I think he was wonderfully funny that day. He was getting a big kick out of this recording session, too. In fact, so much that he was running up and down the fire escape there. He said it sounded better the higher he got because of the acoustics up there at the top of the building. So that's why I would like to take that along. We both laugh about that today.
fire escape plane, knocking a jug. Well, the Tea Gardens, of course, are a very musical family, Jack. Your brother Charles?
My brother Charlie plays a beautiful trumpet, and my sister Norma, pianist.
Uh-huh.
And I have a younger brother who used to play drums, Cloyce.
Yes. And you have a son who was in...
My oldest son, Jack Jr., plays trombone. And they've all been with my big band at one time or another.
Really a family affair.
Yes.
What are your plans for the future, Jack? You've got quite a swing round Europe for a few weeks.
We're going to Scandinavia, and we're going to Germany and Austria and Switzerland and Paris. And I guess we'll be on our way back home again after a wonderful trip.
Oh, it's been wonderful for us to have you. Let's have record number six.
Record number six, Roy, I'd like to bring one called Junk Man with me to my desert island. It features a harpist by the name of Casper Reardon. The late Casper Reardon used to work with Whiteman on some of the Sunday concerts that he used to put on. And I thought he was one of the most talented artists I'd ever heard. And I thought the whole world ought to have the opportunity of hearing him. So when I had this recording engagement coming up, I got Casper to do a solo and his Junk Man. And I agree with my wife about this one. It's one of the smoothest records. It's nice to listen to when you want to relax. And it really jumps, too. That's why we call it Junk Man.
Now comes one of the questions that has to be asked on this program, Jack. We put you on this desert island. How are you going to be able to look after yourself?
Well, that's the problem, Roy.
It certainly is.
I can't cook, and I'm not very good at outdoor life. I don't know a thing about fishing or hunting. I'm a good mechanic, and I'm a good steam engineer. Now, maybe I could cook up a boiler to make my coffee, but that's about all I'd have, I'm afraid.
Well, that's a new thought, right. Cooking by steam on the side.
Cooking by steam.
Let's leave it at that and have record number 7.
Okay. Record number 7, I'd like to take along Old Rocking Chair for 2 reasons. Mildred Bailey made the tune so famous. It's Hoagie Carmichael's composition. And another reason, because I had so much fun doing it with Louis Armstrong on the All-Stars Tours, and we recorded it together, the Old Rocking Chair.
Rockin' chair's got me.
Old rockin' chair got your father.
Cane by my side.
No cane by your side.
Fetch me a drink of water there, son.
No, ain't no water you want, father.
For I tan your hide.
Gonna tan my hide.
Can't get from this cabin.
What cabin, choking father?
Ain't going nowhere.
You ain't going nowhere, no.
Just sitting here grabbing.
Grabbing
at the flies round his rocking chair.
Rocking chair, Lord.
Do you remember old Aunt Harriet?
Aunt Harriet.
How long in heaven she be?
Heaven she be, baby.
Send me a sweet chariot.
Oh, chariot.
At the end of the trouble I see.
My sweet cherry.
Old rocking chair gets it.
Old rockin' chair, get it, father.
Judgment day's almost, yeah.
Judgment day's, yeah.
Change.
Sing it,
to
father.
My old rocking chair.
Ooh. Look at that, father. Dig this.
Yeah.
Old rockin' chair got the father.
I sure it beat.
You can't lay by his side.
Can't even pick that up no more.
I ain't got no water, father.
Well, you better start running.
You're gonna tan my hide.
You said it, you said it.
You can't get from this cabin.
No, I done been wise,
father. No, father. But you ain't going nowhere. You sitting up grabbing.
Yeah.
Grabbing.
Yeah.
You grabbing. The flies round the old rocking chair.
Sure is bothersome.
Rocking chair. Remember old Aunt Harriet?
How long in heaven she be, gay? Let's see, let's
see. Way up in heaven she be.
I hope.
I don't know who said, oh, fetch me a chariot, a chariot.
I've got to ride.
End of the time, trouble I've seen.
Yes, sir.
Oh, rocking chair, get it.
Yeah.
Rocking chair, get it.
Yeah.
And judgment day. Oh, judgment day, yeah, judgment day, yeah. You sit in your chain, you rocking chain.
Yes, sir, okay.
Now we come to your last record, Jack, number 8. What do you say till the end?
Well, I'd like to take along the waiter and the porter and the upstairs maid.
Ah, yes.
When I was with Paul Whiteman, we had a wonderful fella in the trio there. His name was Bing Crosby, and we became real close buddies. So when he had his tremendous start in pictures, he sent for me to do a picture with him called The Birth of the Blues, because I helped start, I guess, jazz music and the blues, and he figured that I should have a part in it. So I went out to California and did this picture with him, and in the picture was a tune called The Waiter and the Porter and the Upstairs Maid, written by Johnny Mercer. So it was Bing and I and Mary Martin did this tune, and I think I had more fun doing that than any record I ever made. Waiting to pour the upstairs made.
as your genial host, may I offer a toast to the wine-buying guest on my right.
Hooray for the wine buyer!
Yes, drag out the cooking sherry for the old colonel. May his bank account grow, heavy laden with dough. May he spend it in here every night.
Every night!
Seeing this night in its glory, you people so loyal, so true, puts me in mind of a story.
Tell us about it, pray do.
The people in the ballroom were stuffy and arty, so I began to get just a little bit afraid. I sneaked into the kitchen, I dug me a party, the waiter
and the porter
and the second story maid.
I peeked into the parlor to see what was a-hatching, in time to hear the hostess suggest a charade.
But who was in the pantry a-laughing and scratching?
Old waiter and the porter
and the upstairs maid.
When they heard the music at the orchestra play,
the waiter and the porter grabbed a hold of the maid.
Then they all proceeded to go into a clog.
Hot diggity dog.
If ever I'm invited to some fuddy-duddies, I ain't a-gonna watch any harlequinade.
You'll find him in the kitchen applauding his buddies,
the waiter
and the porter
and the upstairs maid.
Pardon me, folks, the roast is carved, the wine is served. Why, you look half-starved.
Pardon me, sir, may we be free?
The kitchen crowd is having a jamboree.
I went and got a dishpan to use as a cymbal.
The porter found a regular glass that he played.
The fingers of the waiter were each in a thimble.
You should have heard the music that the combination made. Marching through the kitchen to the pantry and back. Why, man, you should have seen as we were bowling the jack. Once a half an hour passed without any call.
Jack, we had a ball.
The waltzes and mazurkas, we hate them, we spurn them.
We got a lot of rhythms we want to hear play.
Yes, and we know who to go to when we want to learn them.
The waiter and the porter and the upstairs maid.
Now, that's a great finale to your 8 records, Jack. You've still got one more choice to make. Every castaway is allowed to take one luxury to the island. What would you like?
Well, I'll tell you, a part of me is my trombone.
Yes, well, I think we'll let you have that in any case. You can smuggle it ashore, you can tuck it down your trouser leg or something. Might make you swim a little stiff-legged, but nevertheless, you've got that.
Yes,
okay. Something else.
That's part of it. Well, I'll tell you, Roy, if I had some pliers and a few pieces of odds and ends of wire or something like that, maybe I could put myself together a little crystal radio. I think that's probably what I'd be doing.
All right. You like tinkering?
Yes.
Yes. You must promise not to use these pliers and things to make that steam engine you were talking about. That'd be cheating.
Okay.
Oh, many thanks, Jack P. Garden, for letting us hear your choice of Desert Island Duke.
Roy, this has been a real pleasure, and I want to thank each and everybody for being so wonderful to us over here, and I hope to see you again soon.
Yes, come back really soon.
Thank you.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.